Is counsel ready? You may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Chris Beal. I'm counsel for Eastern Colorado Publishing Company, now known as Prairie Mountain Publishing Company, and Bill Holland, the defendants and appellants in this case. This case obviously arises under the Colorado Open Records Act. I'm hoping to be able to reach or talk about three topics today. I want to address an issue raised by the an assertion in the reply brief by the City of Fort Morgan with respect to the deliberative process privilege. Obviously, the appeal here by the Fort Morgan Times, the newspaper, is mostly with respect to the work product doctrine under the definitions of public records. I'd like to address a lingering question about the work product doctrine. And then finally, I'd like to see if we have time to discuss the shifting burdens of proof under the Colorado Open Records Act, and in particular, the framework set out in the WIC communications case of the Colorado Supreme Court. With respect to the issue raised in the, I believe, raised in the reply brief by the city, at page 5 of the reply brief by the City of Fort Morgan, the city asserts that there is a presumption under the Colorado Open Records Act and the deliberative process privilege that disclosure of a deliberative process document will always stifle honest and frank discussion. That assertion that there is a presumption of harm, that disclosure will harm frank and honest discussion, is in conflict with the language of the statute, and I'd like to direct your honors to actually the language of the statute. We're dealing with 24-72-204, subsection 3, subparagraph A, Roman 13. Roman 13 is the deliberative process privilege exemption. And the way the structure of the statute works under 3A, 3A is the list of exemptions from the mandatory public access established by the statute. Under 3A is a whole long list of exemptions from that mandatory public access. Exemption 13 is deliberative process, and the statute reads that public access shall be denied if, or does not apply to, and then the quote from the statute, records protected under the common law, governmental, or deliberative process privilege, comma, if the material is so candid or personal that public disclosure is likely to stifle honest and frank discussion within the government. The main point I want to draw your honor's attention to is there is, within the language of the statute, a question. And the question is the deliberative process document, is its disclosure likely to cause harm, stifle honest and frank discussion? There will, in the eyes of the drafter of the language of the statute, be some deliberative process documents for which disclosure will not harm frank and honest discussion within the government. And those would be documents that are not so candid or personal that disclosure is likely to harm, stifle honest and frank discussion. That's what Judge Vinoy found in this case. Judge Vinoy found that, and the documents we're talking about, it's really the information we're talking about, are the performance ratings assigned by individual council members to former city manager Michael Nagy. Judge Vinoy found that those performance ratings, the numerical ratings, were not so personal and candid that disclosure would harm, would stifle frank and honest discussion. His conclusion on that was pointed to the record, but I would submit to your honors this is actually a question of law. The question is, are performance rating numbers the kind of information, as an objective matter of the law, that would harm, would stifle frank and honest discussion within the government? We know the answer to that, or at least we know the answer that the General Assembly has given us. The General Assembly has carved out of the exemption for personnel files performance ratings. Within the definition of personnel files is a carve out. The personnel files are exempt under the statute, but personnel files is defined as being information related to the employment of the employee, but not including performance ratings. In that statutory structure, we know performance ratings are not personal and candid. They are not subject to an expectation of privacy. There is not a presumption that disclosure of personnel performance ratings will harm, will stifle honest and frank discussion. I should just finish with respect to deliberative process. That's in every privilege situation, there are three questions. Does the privilege attach? Has the privilege been waived? And if it's qualified privilege, what are the qualifications that might defeat the privilege? What your honors are looking at in the first sentence of the statute of section 13 is, does the privilege attach? Is it a record protected under the common law, governmental deliberative process privilege, and is it so candid and personal that it would stifle frank and honest discussion? Next question is, has it been waived? That's not an issue in this case. Next question is qualification. Qualification is the language at the end of section 13 that requires the court to conclude whether or not disclosure would cause substantial injury to the public, cause substantial injury to the public, to the public interest. In that balancing, and that's the issue that the city focuses on. That in the statute requires a balancing of the government's interest in frank and honest discussion within private frank and honest discussion versus the public interest in what does disclosure benefit the decision-making process? Does disclosure benefit public confidence in the decision-making process? Judge Vannoy did both the first, does the privilege attach, and does the are the qualifications met? He found on both of those questions in favor of the newspaper, privilege doesn't attach because these are not personal. Moreover, public disclosure or public interest is benefited by disclosure. Therefore, deliberative process privilege does not apply.
Counsel, as you know, Judge Vannoy agreed with the newspaper on the deliberative issue.
Right.
So I'd like to turn your attention, if I could, to the work product.
I would too. Thank you, Your Honor. I'm anticipating my counsel. Work product. There's a lingering question with respect to work. Number one, we should understand the work the interplay of work product and deliberative process. Work product definition is put into the statute in 1996. It's part of a bill involving questions around access to email of elected officials. In, because of that context, the work product definition in the definitional section of the Open Records Act applies only to elected officials. These are materials that are communicated, that are transmitted, that are assembled and communicated to elected officials. And that's one of the reasons why there's some overlap in the definition of work product, where part of the definition is whether the material is deliberative, and the deliberative process privilege, which is not limited to elected officials. And that's one of the reasons why we have two separate parts of the statute. In any event, work product, to be work product, to be within the definition, the material must be advisory or deliberative, must be communicated to an elected official. That's section 202.6.5A of the definition. And then the exclusions from the definition, the first one, 6.5C1, is can't reflect, must not reflect, a final decision of an elected official. As we say in the brief, neither of those two requirements are met in this case. The material was not advisory or deliberative in the sense that it, first off, it wasn't communicated. The performance rating numbers of the individual council members, as a matter of fact, were never communicated to the council members. What the council members received was a compilation of all of the council members' performance ratings compiled into a single document by the city attorney, and the record is clear that no individual council member ever knew what another council member's individual, or his own, performance ratings were with respect to any of the scoring elements or with respect to the aggregate of any council member. It was not possible, it was possible, but it didn't happen that any council member knew. Council member A, Judge Roman, if you're council member A, and your aggregate score is 5, and Judge Miller, if your aggregate score is 0, Judge Miller, you don't know that Judge Roman's score was 5 in the way the structure was done, because it was all put together, and what happened was we got 2.8.
But why isn't it sufficient from an advisory standpoint that the compiled totals came to 2.8 and that the discussion would start at that point? Why doesn't that meet the advisory definition?
Because the council members did not know what an individual council member's reasons were, or even what the outcome was with respect to that council member's final decision as to that council member's rating. Your Honor, we submit that there were two decisions at play here. There was the individual council member's decision for herself or himself with respect to that council member's evaluation of Mr. Nagy. There was the second decision, which was the collective decision of the council as a whole. Your Honor, if you're on the council and Judge Miller says 5 and you think 0, you may want to know what Judge Miller's reasons were. In fact, in order for Judge Miller's number to be advisory to you, you need to know what his number is. It doesn't help to know what the aggregate number is. In fact, it isn't possible to be deliberative without knowing what his individual number was. And that didn't happen in this case. In the structure that was created, it couldn't be done. And in that respect, it wasn't advisory, it wasn't deliberative, because they didn't know what the individual numbers were.
Well, sir, it was non-final and advisory in this context.
I'm sorry, I missed your question.
Well, I'm setting up my question.
Oh, sorry.
let's say I came out 5, and I see the cumulative is 2.8. So I know that most of my colleagues have a different view than I do. And then in an executive session, I can ask questions and we can discuss that. In any event, if I end up voting for 2.8, that's my final vote, isn't it? Why isn't that my final vote? I'm voting for a 2.8 rating or a 3.0 rating in this case.
That's your second vote.
No, I'm saying that's my final vote.
I understand that. But our view of the circumstances here is that that was your vote on the question of what should be the council's collective rating of Mr. Nagy. Your first vote was what your own rating of Mr. Nagy should be. There was no discussion, and this case is about the first decision, what your ratings were, not what the council's ratings were.
Well, why is that a final decision? Is there something in the city code that says a preliminary determination by a city council person as to what somebody's rating is a final decision?
In fact, there's exactly the opposite. The charter says that the decisions with respect to performance evaluations are the council as a whole. The council has enacted a way of sheltering your individual decisions and asserts that there is no decision until the council has spoken collectively in its collective decision making. But that just ignores the reality of the way our elected process works. If your constituents in your district wanted to find out what you voted for with respect to rating Mr. Nagy, suppose, they wouldn't be able to know anything other than your vote for 2.8.
They would know I voted 2.8, and I would be held responsible for that.
But they wouldn't know that your 5 had skewed that 2.8 number. They wouldn't know that perhaps other council members had decided 0. And if a constituent was a strong supporter of Mr. Nagy, they would not be able to exercise any power of accountability over the council members who voted 0 with respect to their individual decisions. The question here is, can the council create a structure that hides individual decision making and create an imprimatur, a rubber stamp, on the final decision that is done in public and that the public can hold the council collectively responsible, but a person cannot say, I think the city manager should have gotten 5. They voted 2.8, so it's not a big deal. I'll go with that. As opposed to knowing, oh, someone voted 0. I have a big problem with that person. I'm going to vote to take him out of office.
Well, Mr. Beal, you're equating the words decision and final decision. That's my problem. The statute says final decision. I can make a preliminary decision of 5, but after discussion 2.8, I say I'll go along with that. In what sense is my earlier decision in any way final, since I end up voting for a different number?
It's final in the sense that there were two decisions.
Well, but, and one of them came before the other. By definition, one of them is final, that is the last one, and the other one isn't.
And if the last one is the only decision that matters, we will never know how the number was arrived at.
Well, maybe you ought to take that up with the legislature, because it says final decision. I mean, it doesn't say preliminary decision. In fact, these advisory preliminary determinations are shielded by the statutory work product privilege.
They certainly are if they are preliminary decisions. I think the record demonstrates, Your Honor, that these were final decisions. There was no change to any individual council member's individual ratings. They didn't even bring their individual ratings into the process. They didn't even know what other individual ratings were. Their decision with respect to their individual ratings stayed the same. No change.
But when I vote 5.0, as you put it, I'm voting 5.0 with my initial evaluation, that has no consequence to the employee. That nothing happens to the employee because of that. There's no consequence.
I believe it does, Your Honor.
Well,
but
we get to a composite number of 2.8. Mm-hmm. And if I vote for that, then something happens to the employee based upon the 2.8.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the reason we got to 2.8 was because of the individual numbers that were contributed by the council members.
So by your rationale, the entire process of what was going through the minds of all the council members is open to the public. They have to, you can depose them. What were you thinking?
Your Honor, I think there is a way, I'm out of time, but can I? There was a way, there could have been a way that the council could have conducted a personnel evaluation session that was cloaked in the privacy that the council wanted, which was to have every individual council member bring their individual performance rating sheets to the meeting. They make copies, they share them out, and they deliberate on those individual sheets. They actually discuss everybody's individual ratings. And at some point, Council Member Miller says, well, I said 5, and Council Member Roman said 0. Maybe mine is high. I think I'm going to change mine to 4, and it would change the composite number. That would be the way that the process would be truly deliberative and truly pre-decisional. It wasn't pre-decisional in this case on the facts presented here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jeff Wells. I'm the city attorney for the city of Fort Morgan. With me today is co-counsel Stephen Dawes from Light, Harrington & Dawes, and we represent the city of Fort Morgan, a home rule municipality, and Andrea Strand, the custodian of records for that city. Today we ask the court to do three things. First, affirm the trial court's finding that the documents requested by the Fort Morgan Times, in fact, are covered by the work product definition within CORA. Second, to overturn the court's finding with regard to deliberative process, the deliberative process privilege, and apply that privilege to the documents requested by the Fort Morgan Times. And finally, to grant the motion to strike that was filed previously by the city of Fort Morgan. This case, as you've already heard, focuses on two portions of the Colorado Open Records Act. The first one being work product, as cited by my colleague, is 2472202 6.5A, and that's really what the focus of the deliberative or of the work product doctrine is centered on with regard to this litigation. Under 6.5A, work product is any advisory or deliberative materials communicated for the purpose of assisting elected officials in a decision. That's exactly what happened in this case. The Fort Morgan City Council individually made preliminary determinations as to what they believed was Mr. Nagy's performance. Those were then compiled by myself and then provided in a compilation form to the City Council as a whole to be used in executive session to make a final decision and a final discussion of what his evaluation was. And I think decision is important here because there was no decision and there can be no decision made, first of all, individually. The court found that as a matter of fact in its factual findings that no individual council member could provide an evaluation to Mr. Nagy by themselves. It was a collective effort. Second, as pointed out, the charter in the city of Fort Morgan that was adopted by the people, not by city council, requires that there is a collective effort, that they, as a council as a whole, make the determination of what Mr. Nagy's performance was during that year. And then finally, open meetings law prohibits the council from making a determination within the executive session. So the final decision in this case, which the Times argues was at multiple points throughout decision when they submitted their original preliminary drafts to me, and then sometime in the executive session, and then sometime after the executive session. But the facts and the law, or the facts in this case, demonstrate that the final decision came after the executive session, after a final number was provided, and after each council member in open session had its last chance to make a change to the final evaluation. Then a vote was taken. That's the first time a vote was taken, and that the council then ratified what they had, the work product that they had put together throughout this process. And I think it's important
But the individual ratings were never communicated to any other. I mean, if I was a council member, I might rank the person five, but that was never communicated to anybody other than you, apparently, right? Communicated to the other council.
I believe that it was communicated. It was communicated in the sense that the information was provided to me. While it was in a compiled form, I think we shouldn't get hung up on form over substance here. I think what we're looking at here is the communication came in the compiled format, which was, as pointed out earlier, was communicated as to here's where we stand as a whole. I think that portion that requires the communication, you need to read in context of the statute. It says communicated for the purpose of assisting such elected officials. And in this case, even though the preliminary drafts and the preliminary numbers were not directly communicated, they were communicated to me in an effort to assist with the final decision. So I think you have to look at communication within the context. And I think if you look at advisory and deliberative and the cases that were cited by the Fort Morgan Times in their briefs, they don't talk to advisory or deliberative actually being communicative. They're not required to be communicative. Advisory or deliberative are the preliminary individual opinions of the individual council members as they were preparing to do the evaluation of Mr. Nagy. So in response to your question, I believe that they were communicated, albeit not directly to the individual council members.
Mr. Wells?
Yes.
I want to see if I can clarify something. As I understand the law, the employee could have requested, and initially did request, that the evaluation take place in a public meeting. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Under the open meetings law found at 24.6, I think 402, it does provide that an employee can request that their evaluation be held in open session.
And would you concede that had the employee done so, these materials that we're talking about, not just the composite form, but the individual evaluation forms, would have been subject to disclosure?
No, that's one point I don't agree with the judge with, or Judge Vannoy with his findings, because he did find that he believed that there'd be a different outcome if this was an open session. Work product it's work product. It's to assist the decision makers in reaching a final decision. What's disclosable to the public is the final decision and not what was used to get to that decision. And I think rather they had used, for example, a legislator just writes down some notes in the General Assembly on some draft legislation, that doesn't become public because ultimately that legislation is brought forward and passed with everybody in the General Assembly or majority or whatever is required. I think in this case, the work product doctrine attaches to all the documents that are prepared, whether they're on a specific form, as was in this case, or the individual notes on a notebook that are prepared for some sort of an evaluation.
I'm a little unclear as to how that would work in practice here. You would go into an open session, and the council members have before them this composite form that you've prepared. Well, don't they have to start talking about the numbers? the number and the comments and their individual thoughts, and doesn't that kind of
right blow I believe
the privilege
not to the sense that they're not they may not discuss the original notes that they had. So for example, if Judge Rohan says, you know, I believe that he deserved a 2 in this area, and Judge Miller says, I think he needed a 4, they may come to that open session, and you may say, you know, he did a really good job in this area. Remember, he did this, 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 and this. And Judge Miller may say, oh, you know what, I remember him doing that. I want to give him a 5. And Judge Rohan may say, I remember him doing that now. I didn't recall him doing that when I did my initial numbers, but I do recall him doing that now, and now that's persuaded me to change my number. And he can discuss that, but what his initial thoughts were in getting to this point in the process shouldn't be disclosed.
Does the employee have a right to ask at an open hearing?
I think that he can ask.
And you would say the council members would then have a right to decline to answer?
Right, if they didn't want to.
Let me direct your attention to the deliberative process for a moment.
Sure.
What evidence is there that public disclosures would likely stifle the honest and frank discussions within government in this context?
I think there's considerable evidence in the record. If you go to the testimony of each individual council member, each of them testified that they did not want their numbers or their evaluation forms to be made public. Furthermore, they argued or they testified that at times they had made misstatements or incorrect evaluations in their preliminary documents. The evidence goes to show the point that if they are concerned about the what is in the context of their preliminary opinions as being incorrect, that may affect, and some of them testified that they were worried that would impact incorrect or I guess not precise information might have on the opinion of the public with regard to that public employee. And I think that goes to show that it would stifle honest and frank discussion within the government. And I'll shift gears now and discuss a little bit more on the deliberative process.
Can I ask that question? Didn't they all testify that they would all give honest answers, would all give honest information in their event?
Yeah, and I think you need to look at the context of those questions, because the question posed to the council members at that point in the trial was, do you believe that you could be honest despite public criticism? And I think that it was kind of a loaded question. Similar to maybe asking your wife asking you, how do I look in this dress? I mean, you have to look, I think, at the context of the questions, but then I think you need to look at the follow-up questions. And I think that goes exactly to the argument that we're making in our cross-appeal, and that is, if you look at the statute, the way that the court interpreted the deliberative process privilege was that if there's an initial finding that it wouldn't stifle honest and frank discussion within the government, then you don't have to further your analysis of what he didn't have to further any make any more analysis of that statute, and he didn't. If you look at the statute, however, at the end, it says, in determining whether disclosure of the records would cause substantial injury to the public interest, the court shall weigh, based upon the circumstances presented in the particular case, the public interest in honest and frank discussion with the government and the beneficial effects of the scrutiny upon the quality of governmental decision-making and the public confidence therein. There was never a weighing between those two things in the decision. There was never an analysis as to whether or not incorrect information that was provided by counsel in their preliminary drafts, if released, would benefit the public and provide the appropriate scrutiny upon public officials and make the increase the public confidence in the decision-making process.
But yet it strikes me as a heightened burden to have to show substantial injury to the public interest. And then, as my colleague pointed out, Judge Miller, you had everybody testifying that they would be honest. So how do you hit substantial injury to the public interest when the record shows that they all testified that they would be honest?
I believe the substantial injury comes when information that is not correct is disseminated to the public that would harm either the elected official's reputation or the reputation of the employee. I mean, if a council member thought that Mr. Nagy did an absolute horrible job on a certain situation and then wrote that in and then gave him zeros or ones all across the board on this certain area, and it turns out that it was another employee that was responsible for what happened and not the city manager, and that comes to light after the fact that that's been disclosed, doesn't that substantially harm the public in that now the public has a misconception of how the city manager, and as the Times points out, the CEO of the city is handling his job? And doesn't that then put pressure on that individual unfairly to try and explain himself now to the public when there was just a mistake because the council member didn't have all the information? I mean, understand that these council members aren't at City Hall every day. They don't have daily interaction with the appointed officials, and they make their best guess in a preliminary fashion to try and figure out where they believe this individual falls, whether it be the city manager, the city attorney, or prior to the charter change, there was, I think, up to 7 appointed officials that they were doing evaluations on. So I think you have to look at the context of how where these preliminary decisions were made, and if that information was disclosed, how that would have an impact on the employee. Going to your original question as to evidence in the record supporting whether this would stifle honest and frank discussion, I think, again, looking at the record, there's adequate evidence on the record by each individual council member stating that they did not want their information disclosed, and that that in the past they had made these mistakes. And that evidence also goes to the second part of the weighing test, and that is that it would cause substantial injury to the public because, the beneficial effects of the public scrutiny upon the quality of government decision-making. I mean, they haven't made a decision at that point, and to release that information would affect the public's scrutiny upon that decision-making process, and it wouldn't be a fair evaluation of the employee. One other thing I wanted to point out with regard to the cases that were raised by the Fort Morgan Times with regard to the work product privilege, I know that there was a lot of discussion as to whether or not these documents or that the documents were advisory or deliberative, and I think if you look at the cases that they cited, those cases go beyond a give and take a give and take process, and I'm out of time.
Thank you. Any more questions? Thank you, Council. Thank you, Council, for your arguments.
If Your Honor would permit, I want to give you a citation to Your Honor's question. A citation that answers Your Honor's question.
It's your question. Whose question?
Your Honor's question with respect to public confidence in the materials discussed in open session.
Well, I think that's been covered in the briefs, so I think we're set on that. Okay, thank you, Council, for your arguments. Case will stand submitted. We'll issue a decision in due course. You guys need to make